36. Famous Aspect. Rydell bought a white foam takeout beef bowl from Ghetto Chef, then had to figure out how to get up the ladder one-handed without spilling it. Climbing a ladder with something hot in one hand was one of those things that you never ordinarily thought about, but that turned out to be difficult. You can't safely tuck a hot beef bowl under your arm, and when you climb with only one hand, you've got to move that hand fast, keep catching those rungs. But he got up there, didn't spill any, and then he put it down while he unlocked the 2x4 and chicken wire security grid. This had a chrome-plated Nepalese padlock on either side, and he'd found the keys earlier hanging on a nail. It was one of those deeply pointless arrangements in terms of security, because anyone who wanted in could bolt-cut the padlocks, pry their hasps out of the wood, or just yank the chicken wire until the staples pulled out. On the other hand, if you went out, left it unlocked, and somebody took your stuff with no effort at all, he guessed you'd feel even stupider. When he got it open, he settled down on the foot of the bed with his beef bowl and the plastic spoon they'd given him. He was just inhaling the steam when it came to him he should check on the thermos thing, the projector, Laney had called it. He sighed, put his beef bowl down, and got up. Well, he had to crouch. The Globex box was in the cabinet there beside his bag, and the spun metal cylinder was in the Globex box. He sat back down, with the Globex box next to him on the bed, and got to work on his beef bowl, which was worth waiting for. It was strange how this kind of shaved, basically overcooked mystery meat, which he guessed really was probably beef, could be tastier, under the right circumstances, than a really good steak. He ate the whole thing, every last grain of rice and drop of broth, and figured the tourist trap map had put their 3.5 stars in the right place. Then he opened the Globex box and got the thermos thing out. He looked at the famous aspect sticker again, and it didn't tell him any more than it had before. He stood the thing up on its base, on the green and orange carpet, and crawled back up the bed to get the switchblade. He used that to slice open the plastic envelopes containing the two cables and sat there looking at them. The one that was standard power just looked like what you used to run a notebook off the wall, he thought, although the end that went into the thermos looked a little more complicated than usual. The other one, though, the jacks on either end looked serious. He found the socket that one end of this obviously went into, but what was the other end supposed to fit? If the sumo kid was telling the truth, this was a custom cable, required to jack this thing into something that it might not usually be required to jack to. This one was optical, it looked like. The power cable, that was easy. What took a while was finding a socket up here, but it turned out there was one, well, actually the end of an industrial-grade yellow extension cord, in the storage cabinet. No control on the thing that he could see, no switches. He plugged the power cable into the wall socket, then sat on the bed, the other end in his hand, looking at the silvery cylinder. "Hail," he said, and plugged the cable into the cylinder. Just as he did, he had the clearest possible vision of the thing being absolutely and no doubt brimful of plastic explosive and a detonator just waiting for this juice. But no, if it had been, he'd be dead. He wasn't. But the cylinder wasn't doing anything either. He thought he could hear a faint hum from it, and that was it. "I don't get it," Rydell said. Something flickered. Neon butterfly. Torn wings. And then this girl was there, kneeling, right up close. And he felt his heart roll over, catch itself. The how of her not being there, then being there. Something hurt in his chest, until he reminded himself to breathe. If Rydell had had to describe her, he would have said beautiful, and been utterly frustrated in the attempt to convey how. He thought she had to be one of Durius's examples of hybrid vigor, but saying which races had been mixed was beyond him. "Where are we?" she asked. He blinked, uncertain as to whether she saw and addressed him or someone else in some other reality. "Bed and breakfast," he said, by way of experiment. "San Francisco, Oakland Bay." "You are Laney's friend?" "I Well, yeah. She was looking around now with evident interest, and Rydell felt the hairs stand up along his arms, seeing that she wore an outfit that exactly mirrored his own, though everything she wore fit her perfectly, and of course looked very different on her. Loose khakis, blue work shirt, black nylon jacket with a Velcro rectangle over the heart, where you stuck the logo of your company, right down to black socks. With holes, he wondered, and miniature versions of the black workin' walks he'd bought for Lucky Dragon. But the hair on his arms was up because he knew. He had seen, he had, that in the first instant of her being there, she'd crouched before him, naked. "I am Ray Thoy," she said. Her hair was coarse and glossy and roughly but perfectly cut, her mouth wide and generous, and not quite smiling. And Rydell put out his hand and watched it pass right through her shoulder. Through the pattern of coherent light, he knew she must be. "This is a hologram," she said, "but I am real." "Where are you?" Rydell asked, withdrawing his hand. "I'm here," she said. "But where are you really?" "Here? This is not a broadcast hologram. It is generated by the famous aspect unit. I am here with you. Your room is very small. Are you poor?" She crawled past Rydell. He supposed she could have crawled through him if he hadn't moved aside, to the head of his bed, examining the salt-caked hemisphere of plastic. Rydell could see now that she literally was a source of illumination, though somehow it reminded him of moonlight. "It's a rented room," Rydell said, "and I'm not rich." She looked back at this.
"I meant no offense."
"That's okay," Rydell said, looking from her to the projector and back. "I mean, a lot of people, they'd think I'm poor."
"But more would think you rich."
"I don't know about that."
"I do," she said. "There are literally more humans alive at this moment who have measurably less than you do. You have this sleeping place, you have clothing, I see you have eaten. What is your name?"
"Barry Rydell," he said, feeling a strange shyness, but he thought he at least knew who she was, or was supposed to be.
"Look, I recognize you. You're that Japanese singer, the one who isn't... I mean, the one who... doesn't exist?"
"I didn't say that. I mean, weren't you supposed to be married to that Irish guy, Chinese, whatever, in that band?"
"Yes."
She'd stretched out on the bed on her stomach, hands propping her chin a few inches from the occluded plastic bubble. Rydell had a flash of that scene from the water below, like the glaucous eye of some behemoth.
"But we did not marry Barry Rydell."
"How do you know Lainey?" he asked her, hoping to bring it around to some footing that he could stand on as well, whatever that might be.
"Lainey and I are friends, Barry Rydell. Do you know where he is?"
"Not exactly," Rydell said, which was true. She rolled over, gorgeous, and quite literally glowing, in her incongruous mirroring of what he wore, which looked on her like the first and purest expression of some irresistible new fashion, and fixed him with a sorrowful stare. He would in that moment have happily and willingly locked eyes with her for however long she wanted, and have sat there effectively forever.
"Lainey and I have been separated. I do not understand why, but I must trust that it is for our mutual and eventual good. Who gave you the projector, Barry Rydell?"
"I don't know," Rydell said. "It was shipped here, Globex, but in Lainey's name, address in Melbourne, company called Paragon Asia." She raised her eyebrows.
"Do you know why we are together in San Francisco, Barry Rydell?"
"No," he said.
Do you? Lainey believes that the world will end soon, she said, and her smile was luminous. He couldn't help but smile back. I think we went through that one when the century rolled over. Lainey says that that was only a date. Lainey says that this is the real thing. But I have not spoken with him in weeks, Barry Rydell. I do not know how much closer we are now to the nodal point.